This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Something like 25 million households are supposed to get a summer windfall in the mail this week, a tax rebate of as much as $400 per child. The money is directed to the middle class, and there is considerable controversy because more than 6.5 million low-income families were left out, an issue that we've discussed in other programs. Today, we're wondering how people plan to use that money and whether they'll spend it, which is what policymakers hope they'll do. It's just one example of the way that government economists try to shape or anticipate our behavior. If they cut interest rates on loans, to give you another example, they expect that more of us will go out and borrow some money. This hour, we're going to talk about when those assumptions are right and if changes in policy actually affect the way we spend or save our money. Later on the program, we'll talk about the news that Admiral John Poindexter will be leaving his job at the Pentagon. He was in charge of two controversial projects at DARPA, the Defense Department's Advanced Research Projects Agency. So DARPA and Admiral Poindexter later on Talk of the Nation. But first, how much thought do you give to economic policy when you spend your money? Do interest rates influence when you do buy a house or a car? Do you think about what's good for the country when you make your decisions? Do you consciously buy made in USA? Or do you monitor economic indicators closely? Or maybe you're just too busy doing the best you can to feed, clothe, and house your family. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now to help us demystify politicians, economists, and the American public are Diane Swonk, who she's the chief economist for Bank One in Chicago and the author of The Passionate Economist, Finding the Power and Humanity Behind the Numbers. She's in our bureau in Chicago, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with us is Matthew Shapiro, who's with us from his office in Ann Arbor, Michigan, a professor and the chair of the Economics Department and a senior research scientist of the Survey Research Center at the University of Michigan. And I appreciate your coming in today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And let's begin. What is the point of these tax refunds from the government's perspective?
The idea is to put some cash in a highly visible form into the pockets of middle Americans, as you said, and the hope is that it will stimulate the economy by having them go out and spend either on a big ticket item or on increasing day-to-day spending.
And Diane Swonk, what's the evidence that they have that people will actually go out and do pretty much what they expect them to do?
Well, it's inconsistent, and I'm sure Matt has some comments on that as well. We do see, depending on where we are in an economic cycle, people will or will not spend the cash that comes in. Sometimes they'll save it if they're worried about the future and they really feel their own economic situation is at jeopardy. They may not want to just go out and blow the wad. The higher chance you have of someone spending is actually in lower income households where, frankly, don't ever have any other choice because they're living hand to mouth as it is. I do find it interesting that, you know, we see things like Home Depot advertising to come in and spend that child credit tax check that you've got. You actually have this more incentive out there where the private sector has sort of leapt in and said, you know, how can I benefit from this? And that really is something kind of interesting. It started to happen last time we got rebates back in 2001 when conditions were much more shadier about the economy. We're actually in a recession. But it really is interesting that the private sector sort of decided to exploit this as an advertising gimmick as well.
Well, Professor Shapiro, I understand you've done some studies on what happened to the last tax rebate.
Yeah, we conducted a survey about the 2001 tax rate at the University of Michigan. And we found, frankly, to our surprise, that only about 20-25% of households said they would mostly spend the rebate, even though this was a down payment on a 10-year or maybe longer tax cut. The most common response was to pay back debt, and the remainder said save. And this would mean that the policymakers hoped that the spending from the rebate would jumpstart the economy would be disappointed. And if you looked at macroeconomic indicators at aggregate savings rate, a repayment of debt, the findings of the survey were somewhat confirmed. So based on the 2001 experience, I'm skeptical that there'll be a lot of spending from these rebate checks.
Just let me follow up. You said you surveyed their intentions or what they actually did?
We asked them what they planned to do. So the survey was done during the time the rebate checks were mailed out. So some individuals were surveyed before they got the check, some after it. And there was only a slight impact on their response based on whether or not they had actually received it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so getting back to you, Diane, you've written in the introduction to your book about how the study of economics is really about the study of human behavior and about the study of human nature. These, you know, theories about what we're going to do with these money, are they based what are they based on?
Well, it depends. I mean, there's disagreements, and you get eight economists in a room, you get eight opinions mm-hmm. about any topic. But I think it's very important to understand that, you have to make sure that you stay applied. And too often, I think we find that some policymakers, and with a political agenda behind them, but some policymakers would prefer to sort of live in a theoretical world, and they really take the time. Michigan, I have a soft spot for because I'm an alumni of Michigan and certainly their economics department. But the fact that you actually go out and you survey and say, what are you really doing? This is what theory tells us, but what's really happening out there? And I think that's important. A lot of times, theory is based on what they think people are rationalizing about, and they get the wrong. Every consumer is rational in their own way, but they're rational about their own personal experience. What do I need this money for right now? They're not rational to the extent of, if I do this, in 10 years, this will happen to the gross economy or the aggregate economy. They don't think in those terms. They think very more micro. And I think too often when we're thinking about macroeconomic policy, policy for the whole nation, people forget what people are doing at the individual level. And this is something that I think too often gets ignored. I also think different circumstances mean people spend things differently. And I think one of the reasons that people saved a lot, we also had a lot of debt restructuring, enormous amount in the last couple of years with lower interest rates. And people have been amazed at how much debt people have paid down in recent years. And I think a lot of that was a surprise, but because they had a feeling that consumers would only spend. And the point was consumers could spend and restructure their debt simultaneously without having to use all this extra money. That the consumer wasn't the real problem in the economy. So giving more money to the consumer, great news, great political move. You want to stimulate the economy. You want to get it in consumers' pockets. But this time around, I think they might spend a little bit more because there's a little higher confidence in where we're going. Mm-hmm. It feels a little better, so they'd be more willing to do it. But each individual case is different. And so too often, policymakers, I think, sort of lump it all together. And, there were some very good reasons back at the end of 2001 that people were feeling very hesitant and not very good. There's a lot of negative news about the economy at that point in time, and actually the job situation was deteriorating quite rapidly. It really was, even though we were still making money and could refinance our homes to support spending, it wasn't a time where you naturally would have just gone out and spent the wad. We're at a different phase in the cycle now, coming hopefully into a more accelerated phase of the cycle where I think we will see them spend a little more of it. But I think it's very important to do what Matt did, and that was, go back and say, what are you really going to do with this? We need, as economists, to constantly monitor the individual situation of what's going on at any point in time and how it's going to react in the economy at any point in time. Today it's coming on the heels of bigger tax cuts. It's going to be very hard to delineate between other issues going on. And if oil prices, drop further, that's a big, huge transfer of wealth into consumers' hands. So it could be measured later as, people actually, it looks like more of it was spent than even was.
Just a term of definition, when you say we restructured our debt, you mean most of us refinanced our mortgages?
Most of us, we refinanced it, and we refinanced it again, and then we went back and we refinanced it again. And mm-hmm. When we refinanced it, what was interesting about the last refinancing rounds was just the sheer amount of, when people actually refinanced, they took cash out of their home. They made their mortgage a little larger, kept the payment the same, or even reduced it, but took a little equity out of their home, and then they use that to a very large extent, some to subsidize spending, but also to repay existing debt, much mm-hmm. cheaper debt, pay off your credit card, pay off your home equity loan, things like that. And the magnitude of numbers, last couple of years it was running about $60 billion of cash outs going towards debt restructuring. Year to date, $93 billion already.
Wow.
Absolutely stunning.
So we're trying to gather some anecdotal evidence about what you are going to be doing affect the national economy with your $400, if that's what you're getting. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Michelle, who's on the line from Milford, Indiana.
Good afternoon. I am calling because I have a question and a comment, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is we received our tax check in the mail this week, and we have four children, and we got $400 per child, which was $1,600, and my husband nicely told me he'd split it with me.
And you deserve that.
Yeah.
You deserve half of it at least.
Yeah.
Don't you get more since you had the four kids?
Well, no, we got $400 per child.
No, I mean you should get more of the share.
Well,
you had to have those babies.
But he works so hard, and I'm a homemaker, so.
Well,
we suspect you work pretty hard too.
Yeah, I have two kids. You outdid me.
But anyway, so I'm buying a washer and dryer with mine, and we're going to pay the bills with the rest, with my husband's share.
Good for you.
My question is: we have some friends, and they have 8 children. And they're all the age that you can take tax credit for them. They're all under the age of 16, and they have a very large family. And I was there when they opened up their check, and he had $300 and some.
Ah,
and I was floored, and I said, oh, my. And he was, I mean, his face just fell. And I looked at his paper for him because I thought, well, maybe something was wrong or it's just a installment or something, and I'm not sure if maybe they messed up on the tax forms or if there's actually people that are actually not getting this. But I mean, is he under a certain bracket where he didn't maybe make as much as my husband, because we don't share with others, you know, how much we make, and we don't ask anybody either. But
right.
Yes, the Congress made a decision to target this particular rebate at middle-income households. It's not available to high-income households because the tax credit phases out at higher levels of income, but the Congress also decided not to make it available to low-income households that pay little or no income tax.
Well, and this underscores the issue, I think, that we were talking earlier, and I think you said you've discussed on other shows, is mm-hmm. people have the highest, you know, reason to spend the money. Some of them are clearly not getting the access to the money.
If I can finish my comment, he has a job. I mean, he works. He has a job, and she's a homemaker because she wants to stay home with her children. And they can sometimes hardly make ends meet. And it's like I just would.
Well, that's the whole controversy. The working poor, if you will, were the ones that were excluded from this. And that's there's been a lot of arguments in Congress about that. And as Professor Shapiro was saying, the tax rebate was directed at the middle class. Whether you consider that fair or equitable is a political issue.
But thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for making it. I wanted to ask you, now we talk about the people spending this money as one big group, as consumers, but Professor Shapiro, are we different in terms of, you know, groups, age groups, for example?
Yes, we actually looked in the 2001 rebate at spending, by age, and we found that, older individuals, over age of 65 were somewhat more likely to spend. And that's consistent with economic theory. Basically, if to the extent that it was a windfall, older individuals are more likely to spend a windfall because they have a shorter amount of life remaining. So that actually is a bit of economic theory that actually was verified by our survey. But obviously, as Diane has emphasized, individual circumstances vary a tremendous amount. So individuals in debt are potentially much more likely to want to use it to pay down debt. Individuals who are constrained, who have income growing in the future, would economic theory would predict that they'd be likely to spend because they're trying to spend more. They might be up against a borrowing constraint, and this would help relax it. We found in our survey that actually wasn't the case. Individuals with stable income were the most who were most likely to spend.
We're talking about where the rubber meets the road in economic policy, your wallet. And we're taking your calls at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. When we come back, we'll ask, what is an economic indicator anyway, and why should you care? For example, Michelle, who called earlier, she's buying a washer-dryer. I believe that's called a durable good. You can also send us email. Our address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the American economy and if changes in economic policy actually affect the way we spend or save our money. The issue at point is the tax rebate that many American households are receiving in the mail this week, as much as $400 per child. Join the discussion. Do you feel like your financial decisions impact the national economy? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. But before we get much further, we'd like to take a couple of minutes to dissect something that's reported all the time. Economic indicators. Diane Swonk is still with us. She's the author of The Passionate Economist, Finding the Power and Humanity Behind the Numbers. Today, the second quarter GDP was released with an announced growth of 2.4. What does that mean?
Well, I think what's important is, first of all, you have to realize that economic data is, it's trying to measure human behavior. It's the hardest thing in the world there is to measure, but it's our only flashlight into an increasingly dense forest of global economic information. So it's our only way of getting any kind of grip on where our economy is. The GDP number is trying to tell us, you know, where we are, what's the momentum in the economy at this point in time, and how are we set up going forward. This particular number came in almost double what many analysts had been expecting. The reason that, and it did show a very sharp acceleration in final demand in the U.S. That means what actually businesses along with consumers were spending, which was great to see them both accelerating quite sharply off of the first quarter levels. And it looks like setting the stage for some momentum. We also had, of course, finally, they recorded the war, this big surge in defense spending, which was the largest increase in defense spending since the Vietnam War in 1967, and a largest single quarter increase in defense spending. So they finally booked the fact that we actually spent a lot of money going over to Iraq. So that helped to boost the number. But more encouraging was that the number actually had some signs of weak inventories. It means cupboards are bare, factories have to produce. That's important. And so people, you know, to take away from this number, what they should walk away with is, one, it looks like the economy is gaining some momentum, and two, the stage is set for more momentum going forward because we are seeing consumers spend ahead of their tax increases. So they actually had some spending power ahead of that. That's good news, our tax decreases. We're also seeing, finally, corporate sector coming back, which, you know, we all need to eventually get those jobs really generated out there. So that's the way you walk away from it as a sort of layperson. But, I'm not sure how many people beyond those in a small circle really do understand it. We've seen this explosion of financial news, and it's reported everywhere now. But, until everyone starts to, you know, wanting to get into a stock market bubble again, that's when everyone seemed to care at all what these numbers meant. They didn't understand them anyway.
Well, let's talk about the other side of it. Jobless claims were also released today. First of all, what is a jobless claim, and how is that different from the unemployment rate?
The jobless claim is just basically, you know, people putting in their claim that they're going to go ahead and get unemployment insurance. The employment report that comes out tomorrow is a much more broad-based survey of both households and individual establishments to find out what the job picture is about. So it's just a little snapshot. It's volatile. Basically, the way I'd characterize the economy right now from the data we've seen is it's ready to start putting the champagne on ice, but too soon to pop the cork on the champagne yet.
Okay. Professor Shapiro, let's bring you in on this. Another figure that we hear all the time is the prime interest rate. What does that have to do with what Alan Greenspan seems to be announcing every few months?
The prime interest rate is a rate set for banks' best customers. It also is an index used for many consumer loans, such as home equity loans. So it is quite relevant for borrowing and lending among consumers, especially those who have home equity loans. It's not the most important interest rate. It's becoming less important these days as more individuals have money market funds and so on. But it's an important indicator.
Well, one other indicator that we hear about all the time is the stock market figure and the Dow Jones Industrial Average, I guess. Perhaps on the news that we were talking about earlier with Diane is up about 155 points, so people are a bit happier about the way things are going. But that could lead back to a bubble, which could lead to a whole other set of definitions that we have to get to. Let's go back to the calls. It's easier. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, and Mike is on the line with us from St. Louis.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just don't understand why. Well, I do understand our government. They're always trying to play with us, and they're constantly using these extremely inefficient tax things to try to get points or make policy. And it's the free market, that's why we're the successful country we are, is because we're free to make these economic decisions. And what this does is it countermands that. And in extreme emergencies, I would say it might be a good idea to try this. And that way we would be all on board. But no one really pays attention to the specific instructions that we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to spend our money, except that we respond to the people that have the money, like the Walmarts, the big advertisers who can, you know, induce us to spend, and thereby the big corporations get the real benefit. But once their money is put into the system, it tends to go into the stock market and places like that where it's liquid and people can get in and out. So it really doesn't do long-term benefits or specific benefits. I mean, that's my belief.
Well, Mike, I'm getting into an argument with you here, but this most recent $400 was directed not to the wealthy or to the poor, for that matter, but to the middle class in hopes that they would spend it.
Right, but they're not going to take that money and say, oh, this is earmarked for that such and such. It's the extra money, and they're going to do, if they're well-to-do, they might spend it on the stock market, they might spend it wherever, but it's not going to. It just doesn't make economic sense that people respond to this type of thing the way the policymakers want it to.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, when they do this all the time, they essentially wear out this whole fabric of manipulation, because we don't respond to that unless, again, it might be an emergency where we would have some kind of national consensus to do something like that. But other than that, it just. In the reason why we're a great country is because we don't do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get a response. Diane Swank?
Well, I think, you know, that you bring up some interesting issues, and that is, you know, are we just tinkering on the edges of policy here, or are we doing something major? For better or worse, we're doing something really major. Usually policy is just tinkering on the edges, and they usually do more harm than good, and we could end up realizing we've done more harm than good if we really run ourselves into deficits over the long term, and sometime in the future, all of us have to pay that back. And so I do think that there are some real risks in terms of the policy decisions we've made. We could also see, no one's talking about it, but, you know, 5 years down the road, inflation could be the word of the day instead of deflation, and deflation's already fallen by the wayside. So, you know, there is the risk that when the government gets into it, that they muck things up. But the other issue is, and I think this is important, is that, remember, we're the people who elect these people and put them in Congress. And at the same time that everybody wants their Social Security, and wants that protected, they also don't want to give, and they want, I've talked to a lot of senior citizens, they want medical coverage for prescription drugs. Understandably so. They're very costly. However, that's going to cost us, they don't want deficits. Well, okay, where do you want us to trade off? They're not giving the government, there isn't enough national consensus. There's a consensus to go ahead and say, go ahead. We're not punishing those who are, as there was in the early 90s, a consensus on fiscal discipline. It's not there now. Mm. And that's partly our fault, because we're not punishing those who are giving us Christmas in July.
This tax rebate is only a small part of the tax bill that was passed in earlier this year. There are significant changes in reducing the taxes on dividends, and there are very significant tax rate cuts, both for upper income brackets and in the marriage penalty reduction. Consumers will start seeing those, or already will have seen those, in their July paychecks. And in terms of numbers, the amount of money being transferred from the government back to households is much bigger, so it's likely that we will see some stimulus. Mainly from the reductions in withholding that are kicking in now. It's important to understand that the tax bill that passed in 2003 is very front loaded. The total estimated cost was $350 billion over 10 years, but over 80% of that's in the first few years, and most of that's in the form of lower income tax payments, not just these rebates, but the reduction in withholding, and that's likely to have some substantial stimulus for the next year or so, even if the spending rates are lower than policymakers had extrapolated from the past.
Well, let's get some email responses. Chris Bovitz in Lakeville, Minnesota wrote, "My wife and I have already received our child tax refund check. Since it's because of our two children that we're receiving this tax refund, we're going to put it toward their respective college savings plans. What better way to invest in the future than in the education of our children?" Then Steve in Baltimore wrote, "I'm grateful for the $800 windfall I'll receive, but will not directly put it back into the economy. I'm going to pay down part of the $2,000 I carry in credit card debt." Diane, again, examples of individuals responding to their individual needs.
Exactly, and that's exactly what policymakers should expect. They have to make a choice. Listen, any policy put out there, winners and losers come out of it, and some people are going to walk away a little bit less happy than others. And that's the nature of any kind of shift in the economy. But I think what we're seeing is really how diverse a group it really is, and how I think some of the issues that Matt brought up earlier, not everybody just goes out and spends this stuff.
Yes, and so we've had a sample of three, and we've had two paying off debt and one at least partially spending. That's similar to what we saw in 2001. And paying off debt, it improves the balance sheet of the individual, has essentially no effect macroeconomically. It's basically an increase in government debt offset by a decrease in household debt, and for the short run, it's essentially a wash for total demand.
Okay, let's go to Gretchen, who's with us from Stockbridge, Michigan.
That's correct.
Okay.
Don't blink, you'll miss it.
No, I saw the MI, and I wanted to say Massachusetts, but go ahead.
The question is, we don't pay attention to economic policy. And, you know, we're a middle-class family. We got three kids, another one on the way. My husband works full-time. I work part-time. We're thrilled to get the money because we always have something to spend it on. And so basically, it pays whatever the next thing is that needs to get paid. And, you know, we're going to take this money and put it towards something that we might have had to use the credit card for, and now we don't have to. And, you know, as to whether it makes a difference in the grand scheme of things, I don't know that most people think about it that way.
Do you?
I think they think, yay, I'm getting some money back.
Do you, when you're buying whatever it is with your $400 or $800 or wherever?
$1,200.
$1,200, congratulations. as you spend it, though, what are you going to look for the tag on whatever it is you buy and see if it's made in USA? Is that important to you?
No, actually, because what we're paying for is we're paying the midwives who will be attending the birth of our next child.
I see. Got another happy little rebate on the way.
It'll be our number four for the next time that they give X rebates on kids. And that's something that we're going to pay for anyway. If we didn't have that bill, we'd spend part of it to pay off debt, and a little bit of it we would do something fun with.
Okay.
So you're saying largely that you're going to just have less debt. You're going to spend basically what you'd planned and borrow less than you would have otherwise.
Exactly. We'll have a little bit less debt this way than we would have otherwise. So I guess we're paying off debt proactively.
Thanks.
You can look at it that way.
Thanks very much, Gretchen, and have a good time doing it.
I think we will.
Your results are holding up, Matt.
Our guests are, that was Diane Swank, who's a chief economist for Bank One in Chicago, and Professor Matthew Shapiro of the University of Michigan. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller. Kathy's with us from Los Angeles.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, great. I was just calling to say that in California, of course, we've got a terrible budget crisis. So our $400 rebate will be just about exactly balanced by the tripling of our vehicle registration tax. And do they look at that at all, how state taxes and federal taxes interact and cancel each other out?
That's an excellent question. I'll let Matt enter on it, too. One of the things that we look at as an economist on the outside is this is an issue, is the state and local budget crisis is took about 3 years in the early 80s to offset the Reagan tax cuts with increases at state and local level. There is a lag. You're more direct in California. But it is a real problem because actually the lower the taxes the federal government takes in, it actually means lower revenues for state and local governments, too, when they're already in crisis. So these are things that often are not taken into account when conducting national policy, how it's going to interact and flow through to local policy.
Professor?
There's not a direct link between these tax cuts and state budget crises, but the fact that states are in crisis means that they will be raising fees, some might be raising taxes, they'll be cutting back services. All those will tend to depress the economy, and that's a factor weighing against whatever stimulus we'll get from the federal tax cuts.
Okay, Kathy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Angela, and Angela's in Eugene, Oregon.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just got a quick comment. I was driving along one day, and I realized it's quite, after especially hearing Daniel Shore's statement about, you know, buying things made in China, that Americans really need to revitalize their made in the USA spirit. So my goal was, I just got a silkscreen machine, and my goal is to start a nonprofit organization because I notice Americans love T-shirts, and they love awareness ribbon campaigns. So I want to start a green ribbon awareness campaign here in Oregon so people can be aware of buying a local goods and then be made in the USA. Slogans, made in the USA, is it on you? You know, something like that. And just, I bought the silkscreen actually initially because I was going to go through my local dealers for screen printing.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody had any made in the USA T-shirts. I had two people have to call me back, and they were kind of like, well, we might be able to get you something, but it's going to be way more expensive. And you know, awareness is just something. I'm sure Americans are good people, and they don't want to, you know, I suppose, throw our economy offshore.
Was the machine you bought, the silkscreen machine, it was that made in America?
I have no idea. I haven't really poked around, but I highly doubt it. I saw a flash box, and it had this big "Made in China" written on it. So,
so perhaps not.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm definitely going to have to start sourcing some made in America. And, you know, it's going to be ironic if it says made in, you know, we're made in the USA and the shirt was made in Honduras.
Well, thank you, Angela, very much. And good luck with your project.
Mm-hmm.
We just have a minute or so before the break. And wanted to ask you, basically, as you look at the way this stimulus goes, Diana, there seems to be so many attempts to stimulate the American economy. Interest rates are still bumped up a bit, but they're still very low historically. That's all, you know, effort to get that consumer engine going again.
It's the consumer, but it's also an effort to get the corporate sector going again. That's been the lagging sector. I think what we have to just think about is we've never had such an extraordinary confluence of things helping the economy at the same time. And so what's different this time around? Well, the stars are in alignment. We've now got everything in a row. And frankly, if this doesn't work, tax cuts, currency weakness, increased government spending, all of it put together, tight inventories in the economy, needing to replenish all those shelves. It doesn't work. We got to rewrite economic theory.
We're speaking with Matthew Shapiro and Diane Swonk about the intersection between economic policy and actual human behavior. When we come back from a break, we'll continue to take your calls on this issue, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address again, TOTN@npr.org. And we'll also talk to you about DARPA, the little-known Defense Department agency that was responsible for the recent debacle of the terrorism futures market and also invented the Internet. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, join Ira Flatow on Science Friday for part one in a series on the 100th anniversary of the flight at Kitty Hawk. What happened before the Wright brothers? That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday with Ira Flatow. And now we're going to wrap up our conversation with Diane Swonk, the chief economist for Bank One in Chicago, and Matthew Shapiro, a professor and chair of economics at the University of Michigan. We're talking about how people are planning to spend the rebates rebates that they're receiving this week, up to $400 per child in a tax credit rebate, and whether that can give us any information on how people actually respond to economic policy, and the question being, do they do what economic planners and government officials hope they do? Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get another phone call. Brian's with us on the line from Edmond, Oklahoma.
Hi, Neil. This is Brian Leonard.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is why? What do they hope to accomplish by the tax rebate? I mean, the people that get the tax rebates, some are educated in economic spending and some aren't.
Well, Professor Shapiro, what are they're hoping to accomplish? A jolt for the economy to boost consumer spending, right?
That's right. I don't think we should underestimate the good sense of the American consumer. I'm sure there are lots of discussions around kitchen tables about what to do with this rebate, and individuals will make different decisions based on their circumstances. And what the policymakers are hoping for is that they spend, because that will stimulate the economy. And it what might happen if they end up saving or paying off debt, there'll be less stimulus, but the individual consumers will be better off. Their balance sheets will be in better shape, and they might spend more, but down the road.
Right. Wouldn't it make sense to make some kind of a tax incentive for corporate America, the executives? Couldn't you target the executives and give them some kind of an incentive to where they could reinvest in their corporations and create new jobs?
Well, the tax bill had investment incentives. The main one is cutting the tax on dividends. That actually is a pretty inefficient way of stimulating investment immediately, because it basically gives a tax break to investment that's already happened. That's the plant and equipment that's generating profits and dividends now. The rationale is that it makes future investment less expensive for the firm, because it reduces the cost of capital, because individuals who invest in companies won't have to pay taxes on the dividends. But that link is actually quite weak in the short run, although it should be beneficial down the road.
In the long run, it would be beneficial, man.
Yes.
Oh, I think it's important to point out, too, is why do we have this kind of tax structure instead of one that more directly stimulates investment? And that's because, frankly, voters would rather have the stimulus go to them first. And people who vote are consumers, not corporate America.
Well, I assume corporate America votes, too, but just in smaller numbers than consumers.
In smaller numbers. Two-thirds of the economy is consumers, and that's what matters when it comes out to the voting booth. And you have to remember, a lot of this is designed towards, we got 2004 elections coming up, and if you don't think those are playing into this, then, this is an important issue. Yes.
It's more or less a political decision then.
It's always a mix between politics and economics. Unfortunately, economics often gets the short end of the stick.
Brian,
yes, I agree.
Thanks very much for your call, Brian. Appreciate it. Here's an email we got from Lou Smith in Santa Clara, California. He writes, what the individual does with the tax break is irrelevant to the economy. If I spend the money, it goes into the economy. If I save the money, then the bank has more money to lend to people who have good reasons to spend it, and it goes into the economy. If I pay down debt, the lender has more money to lend, and it goes into the economy. Does it matter which one of those injectors into the economy matters, Diane?
Certainly does in the short run. I think that's what's important. I mean, Matt already pointed out, if people pay down their own credit card debt, it gives them better balance sheets going forward, and maybe they can spend more going forward. But the immediate stimulus, the knee-jerk reaction the government's looking for, is to spend today, because it does dramatically impact the timing. How the tax rebate is spent or used affects the timing at which it hits the economy. And frankly, the more the sooner is what the government's hoping for at this stage of the game.
Well, thank you very much, and we're going to leave it there. Diane Swonk, who you just heard, is the chief economist for Bank One in Chicago, author most recently of The Passionate Economist, Finding the Power and Humanity Behind the Numbers. She joined us from our bureau in Chicago. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Matthew Shapiro, thank you, too.
Thank you very much.
Matthew Shapiro, a professor and chair of economics at the University of Michigan, a senior research scientist of the Survey Research Center, also at the University of Michigan.